You're listening to a Mint podcast brought to you by HD Smartcast.
Hi, I'm Shovik Das. I'm Leslie DeMonte.
And I'm Deepthi Ahuja. You're listening to Mint Etc.,
a podcast where we will talk about important developments in technology and how they will transform our lives, work, and play as we know it. Welcome back to Tech Cetera. We are back with your favorite tech podcast. And as with every week, there's a lot that's been happening in the AI domain. But there's also a lot that's been happening a little outside of AI as well. So this week, Leslie and I are speaking about a little bit of this and a little bit of that. But we start our episode today, Leslie, with none other than Scarlett Johansson. Of course, she's an excellent actor, and I personally think that her role as Black Widow in the Avengers series is pretty much the best. But she's been in the news this time, not for her superhero roles, but for an AI lawsuit, and especially against Sam Altman and his apparent use of her voice in ChatGPT-4o's voice search feature. Now that's interesting because Scarlett Johansson was also the voice behind Samantha, who was the AI character in the famous Academy Award winning movie Her, which Joaquin Phoenix and Scarlett Johansson were a part of. And that movie, interestingly, we've all kind of seen it. All of us who've been in the field of technology, we've seen it and we've been like, oh, this is going to happen one day. And it's kind of happening today already. So Leslie, before we sort of get into whether this lawsuit is legit or whether what Altman did was right or wrong and all of that, what do you feel about this entire situation about, you know, like an AI assistant resembling, you know, like a celebrity personality's voice, and how that works towards popularizing such a product and eventually that becoming like a sort of voice in your head that makes you feel as if you're familiar with that voice?
Yeah, so I think just to begin with, you mentioned Black Widow, but I liked Lucy and a role in Avengers much more. Lucy was an interesting movie for me. I know it had nothing to do with its adherence to scientific principles or anything to do with that, but it was just, for me, it was a fun movie. I liked the concept of thinking that we have that kind of power. But that's in the philosophical realm, not for Mint, etc. podcast. But interestingly, this entire debate about AI voice cloning, if you remember, we have spoken about voice cloning in our earlier episodes. So I will not, you know, repeat myself. But yes, the point, voices can be cloned very easily. We have all the AI tools today to do that. You just take a 3-second voice of somebody and you can just replicate it. Now, when you do it with celebrities, it garners attention. But the point is, like, just think about any one of us, including you and me, who are on this podcast. Now, think about it. Our voices are freely available on the internet. If somebody wants to clone it, there's precious little that you and I can do about it.
Right.
Okay. So that's one part of it. But I think the fallout, the consequences of what could happen, that I mean, because in this particular case, I think OpenAI has sort of, at least for now, proven that, you know, it's not her voice as such. That they have used somebody else's voice. But, you know, that is besides the point. What is a bit unnerving, and I think should be unnerving also in this particular case. See, I don't fear this entire thing of artificial general intelligence. This AGI thing doesn't, you know, scare me. I see that more as a distraction. But it is these smaller things, like whether it's voice cloning, whether it's a deep fake, and the ramification that it has is what is more disturbing. Because a lot of lumpen or unscrupulous elements always keep on misusing this technology to, you know, swindle people. Yeah, right. Just think about the ramifications. I mean, somebody takes your voice or my voice, impersonates us and uses it in the bank or uses it for something else. It's scary, and it should be scary. So what can be done about it? I think it's important to highlight such cases, and it's important for big tech firms to put in some kind of safeguards. So when they put out these technologies, one is, of course, the role of regulators. Regulators will always devise policies, but those policies will never be able to keep pace with the incredible pace at which technology is moving.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So big tech has to take responsibilities. There has to be an overarching rule, according to me, where big tech act when they are devising any policies themselves, there should be these kind of principles that they have to adhere to. Let me give an example. You have Isaac Asimov's three principles for robotics, right? Something very similar has to be done for any new AI tool that is put out in the market. These are my initial thoughts.
I think based on what you said, another part of this very important conversation is around copyright and copyright laws, because I think what Johansson herself had alleged is that in the lawsuit that she filed is that Sam Altman had approached her multiple times to
I knew that, but that's exactly so copyright, trademark violations, etc. See, if you remember in India, like Shah Rukh Khan's voice has been cloned, right? Okay, but that has been done with all the licenses, with all the stuff, and it has served a particular purpose for branding. And so now, where does the use start and where does the misuse end? Where does the misuse start and where does the use end? You have to be a little careful that all these technologies bring in a lot of benefits. They help you, for instance, you use somebody's voice who's not articulate and you want to reach out from a credibility purposes. Builders may use somebody else's voices in different language. Now, they can't have somebody, translating it from Hindi to Telugu to Tamil to Malayalam to Punjabi to Urdu or Sanskrit or Gujarati or whatever language it be. So obviously, AI tools are going to be of tremendous benefit over here. But when somebody impersonates that for a different reason, that's where the credibility issue comes in. So it is. We always know that technology has historically been a double-edged sword. Now, how do policy? That is exactly where policies come in place. That is what I'm saying. Big tech has to take responsibility for this. And this is exactly. So if you remember, I mean, not to digress out here, but look at the people who have left OpenAI from the ethics committees. Now, that sort of does not send the right signals.
It definitely doesn't send the right signal. Plus also OpenAI, I think itself recently joined this alliance called C2PA.
Yep.
And the C2PA body's entire objective is to create transparency and a sort of mark of authenticity of content, of AI generated content. And on the same note, in fact, on the same week, the last people from OpenAI's ethics board left. And even as it joined the C2PA alliance, and OpenAI has sort of done only those kind of moves which seem to have ticked the sort of, PR checkboxes, so to speak, instead of sort of taking the other measures which might have protected, sort of AI content authenticity's interests.
Yeah, but Shavik, why just single out OpenAI? Before that, you had Google. So Google had hacked Temnet, Gebro.
Yeah, Amazon, Microsoft, all
Amazon
of them.
Amazon has done that. So has. And now, of course, I think of late, I think the only ones who are making a right move, and I mean a move in the right direction, as I would say, is Microsoft by strengthening its ethics committees. And I'm sure others will have to follow suit. Meta is going open source, so I have hopes that things might turn out. But, many of these things are on paper as of now. We want to see whether, they're just going to, even the rules, etc., are going to be paper tigers, or we're going to have something more than that.
Right.
That's exactly the fear that everybody is voicing, that, otherwise these AI technologies will sort of become so powerful and their misuse will be rampant, and we won't be able to have, enough safeguards in place. Because each and every time, it's a little You know, it's not pragmatic to keep on saying that, okay, I'm going to devise a policy around it. If you can nip it in the bud,
yeah, absolutely,
it would make a lot more sense. But
in fact, just going to say that you know, we keep speaking about policy as a recourse for a lot of things, but
it's always reactive, no?
The policymakers themselves say that, you know, policy is not really always the answer.
Exactly, it is reactive. You need some proactive stages, and that's exactly what needs to happen.
Right. And, you know, on that note, Leslie, what one of the things that I was thinking about is in this entire sort of issue is that, you know, the reason why, you know, a voice similar to Scarlett Johansson's would be used in an AI product is perhaps because her voice is familiar to a lot of people, and perhaps because it's a voice that, you know, we find to be sort of attractive based on what we've heard so far. And that also draws our attention back to the movie itself, the movie Her. Do you think we are at that position where, you know, voices of AI will play a certain role, which will draw us to a specific AI product or sort of take us, keep us away from one?
But that has been... I mean, that has been done historically. I mean, whether you had these kind of newer tools, at the end of the day, whether a tool has given you Scarlett's voice or not, that's different. Because if you use the GPS, for instance, there are certain voices that, you know, make it very soothing, or you can always change it. So, or like when you go back to All India Radio, you want Amin Sayani's voice. Now, using a voice cloning, you can actually recreate Amin Sayani's, the late Amin Sayani's voice, such a weird kind of, you know, that sonorous kind of voice, deep bass, and and many people can, you know, create that and use it. So there is that. So around whether you want to call it nostalgia, whether you want to call it familiarity, whether you want to call it some kind of comfort level, or Amitabh Bachchan's voice, for that matter of fact.
Right.
Everybody resonates with it, and there's a certain sense of credibility attached to it. That's why he comes in these HDFC ads, you know, these bank. Now, whether that same kind of credibility will be generated if you get a villain's voice.
I would find a villain's voice as part of my, you know, AI assistance offering.
Just think about it, whether you want Shakti Kapoor's voice on that or you want some, I mean, people might cringe a bit, you know, so it's not, I'm not too sure about it.
I don't mind Norman Bates from Psycho, though. That can be pretty interesting.
You might be a different breed, but we're talking about most of the people.
No, that is true. That is true. On that note, in fact, I wanted to draw your attention to this particular smartphone that I've been using of late, which is also linked to AI, because it is the Google Pixel 8a. It is it is actually Google's least expensive phone. And from
What's the cost?
It's priced at 53,000 rupees, which, you know, in the modern day scheme of things is quite affordable, in fact, because people seem to be spending a lakh and a half and God knows
what. The price point is amazing. I mean, I think it has a Tensor G3 chipset. You know, one thing I think what will be interesting to explain from a point of view, because you are the ones one who's doing a lot of these reviews. I find a lot of now they come with three cameras, they come with four cameras. So one is primary sensor, one would be an ultra wide sensor in the back, one will be a front kind of camera. So of course, I think with Google Pixel A, my issue is with all the Google Pixels is that they overheat. That's my major issue with them.
Right.
I have a Google Pixel 3 user, I've been a Google at a 6, 8 I have not used, so I don't know, but I find I've always, you know, had this problem of overheating. I don't know whether it's the same case with Pixel 8a.
So they seem to have improved it quite a bit. In fact, I've been using the Pixel 8a extensively for a bunch of games, because they've also, you know, so far the A series was looked at as the, you know, the budget phone, and you know, they would offer half the features in it and leave the rest for the just the number series. But the 8a has a 120 hertz, like, you know, the smooth, the fast refresh rate display now. So it feels very smooth, and I've been sort of playing games on it and also using the Gemini advanced chatbot as well, which is also quite fun.
But are you sure that this would be a gaming? Because that was actually my next question, that I'm wondering whether it is really going to be a gamer's smartphone. Because one is, of course, it's because it does overheat. I mean, you may not be feeling it, but I have seen a lot of other reviews saying that it overheats.
So it overheats after a certain point. So if you're gaming for, say, more than 35 minutes, the moment I cross the half hour mark is when I really start feeling the heat on the body of the phone. But truth be told, these overheating tests and sort of like the benchmarks of what is a gaming phone and what is not is something that's always sort of confused me a little bit, at the very least, because even the best of the Samsung Galaxy S24 Ultra, I was using that until some time ago, or even the iPhone 15 Pro Max, which is supposed to be the best phone in the world right now, even they heat up, especially in India. Sitting in India, the kind of temperatures that we sort of live in, and even inside sort of like an office air-conditioned room, none of the phones do not heat up. So there is a tendency of phones to overheat anyway, beyond perhaps 35 to 40 minutes, maybe so 45 minutes of video.
I have a suggestion for handset makers. Instead of talking about 200 megapixel cameras, which is such a, I mean, I don't think we can really think beyond 12 megapixels. I don't know what sense it makes, to have a 200 megapixel camera, especially when most of the pixels are binned. So I've never really understood that. Pixel binning as such is a technical term which causes lower resolution, that really doesn't help anybody's cause in the first place. But more important than that, I think, I'm saying it half in jest, but I think they should figure out some way of putting an AC in. because we used to have camera, if you remember, fans in the laptops and all.
Absolutely. A bunch of gaming phones that were launched in the middle, which had, which were launched by Asus and Lenovo in particular, they were gaming specific smartphones which had a liquid cooling attachment. Yeah. And one of them had a tiny little fan, which also had LED inlays, so that when you put it on, the LEDs would start glowing as the fan went on. It just looked really cool. I don't know how much it really helped, to be very honest.
That is what I'm saying. I think those technologies are far more important in a country like India, maybe India, Africa, and all these other places. I think where you have tropical climates and where climate change is causing all this heat. But from a competition point of view, I was reading somewhere, it's the IQ0012, OnePlus 12R, etc. What is your take on the competition?
So OnePlus 12 is like, was so far like the sweet spot of smartphones which were competing against the Pixel 8a. The one thing which a lot of retailers happen to speak, I've been speaking with a bunch of retailers for the usual reporting that we do, and one of the things that all of them happen to mention is that people who tend to buy the Google Pixel, it's sort of like the iPhone's user base, that people who tend to use the Google Pixel don't really enjoy going beyond to other brands, because of the software experience, just because of the clean Android experience.
That's not really true, because I have been using Google and I've moved back to Samsung.
Only brand, in fact, which comes close to Pixel, and that's true even in my sort of analysis, is OnePlus, which offers a cleanish, software interface. But Samsung and EQ and all the others are a pretty significant departure. It, of course, depends on how you...
It's also personal taste, because, I was probably using Samsung phones over a period of time. So, because I didn't sort of adopt Apple ever, because for the simple reason I always found it proprietary. So in principle, I stayed away from it. And it's a closed ecosystem, so you have to have an iPod, you have to have a thing to, you know, to make the best use of the Apple ecosystem as such. I wasn't really keen on it because I use multiple devices. So I've always been using both either the Samsung and the Google Pixel. I've been experimenting between both, whatever gives you. For me, the overheating with Google Pixel was the most irritating part of it, but anyway, I mean, that's a secondary issue. But I think before we conclude this time, we should must talk about, you know, the much spoken AI overviews,
right? And they seem to be creating a lot of all the negative noise right now for generating, you know, the results that are causing misinformation concerns, and apparently they're misleading users. Have you tried to use the AI overviews and found weird answers? Because in the few Google that I've spotted,
so to begin with, Shavik, Google AI overviews is not released in India. Okay, so you don't have it as of now. You cannot use it in India because I think they still have to release it officially. Yeah, but you can go to labs.google.search and then, you know, check out some of these results. So you can do that. And it does give you weird answers, because I think that integration part has still not been sorted out. Google is saying that it will sort it out over a period of time. But for me, the hallucinations are, you know, remnants of what happened with the Microsoft chatbots, if you remember. Google's own... when Google launched Gemini, you remember the kind of weird hallucinations that it had.
Right.
So with Bard and with Gemini also. And why ChatGPT, for that matter of fact? It's not that ChatGPT was above board.
Right.
And many other things. So I think this will be a learning process at this point in time, and it's going to take some time before they... iron out the issues. But more important than that is, you know, why are they rushing to do that? Because you realize that all of them, instead of ironing it out and then putting it out, which I think that is going to be near to impossible, but at least getting the product 90% right. I think these guys in this entire thing of big tech wanting to compete with each other and make these making their announcements every week or every 2 days, sort of, you know, are trying to outdo each other. In that race, they are like putting out these half-baked products. Now,
that's been one of the biggest criticisms this time.
Yeah, but it's like, it's getting dangerous. See, I can understand, as I said even last time, during the pandemic, it's understandable when they wanted to get the vaccines out because there was an urgency. What is the urgency now? Really? Right. I mean, what exactly is the urgency other than, you know, pleasing the shareholders and making our lives miserable? Because the amount of problems that they're going to create is much more than the kind of problem they're going to solve.
I think it's more than solving problems. One of our reportage from out of IO was that pretty much all or like most of the moves that Google did at their new AI products and so on were either direct responses to Meta, Microsoft or OpenAI.
Exactly.
And it seems to be all about that competition, because Google has so far led, you know, everybody in the search space, and they not only lead, they have like essentially, you know, market dominance in search and, you know, internet services. But just like that, OpenAI came in, and now Google thinks that it's going to be pretty practically possible for any entity to take on the sort of market share that Google Search has. And to protect that, it is now rolling out features at a certain pace, which it probably wouldn't have done maybe 5 or 7 years ago.
Exactly, because you think, see, that is essentially the essence of the entire thing. Because if you look at it, Google Search today is about 80% market share. Right. Yet, if you realize that the way LLMs are structured, this is exactly what is happening over a period of time. So LLMs are competing with them. LLM-based chatbots are competing with search engines. They're enhancing it. You have Perplexity. You have many other chatbots that are competing with them. And it's going to create a problem. But I was just looking at the history of Google very quickly, is that their social platforms, if you remember Orkut, Google Buzz, Google Waves, Google Plus, then all of them, in fact, actually Google Hangouts.
Right.
None of them, Google Currents, I still remember some of the names.
Currents, yeah.
Yeah. So all of them have been put to sleep. You know, as simple as that. The only successful product that has come outside of Google in this space was YouTube. But even YouTube was acquired for something like
YouTube was an acquisition, yeah.
Yeah, it was an acquisition. So really nothing that Google built. So Google's real strength has always come from search and it wants to retain that. So probably that's where the desperation has come in.
But right. Really. Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's what most people have been saying, that even in the developer space, Google has suddenly sort of stepped up and is trying to do much more with developers, in order to kind of have them work with their APIs and try to kind of encourage them to create more with the Gemini. On top of the Gemini layer, but most people have been used to building things on the GPT stack. And I was speaking with yet again a bunch of developers. Akrit, in fact, was one of them, who happens to mention that, you know, we've built our products on the GPT stack, and at least for now, there's no reason for us to step out of the GPT stack because it is pretty much the industry best. And that seems to be the consensus. And on that note, we are going to continue our AI conversations next week as well. But next week, we're also going to touch upon a bunch of other industries, including a little bit on why we do not seem to get uniform connectivity, mobile connectivity on flights even today. But that's for next week. For now, it's a wrap from us. As always, if you want to send a feedback or write to us with suggestions for a new topic that you want us to talk about, do feel free to write to us on email or on our social handles, all of which are in the description. And that's it for this week. See you next time.
So folks, that's it for this episode. You are listening to Mint Tech Etc. You can reach out to us on LinkedIn if you have any questions. Our handles are in the description.
This episode was produced by me, Deepthi Ahuja. It was edited by Amrinder Singh. Catch you next week.
To stay updated on this podcast, follow us at HD Smartcast on all the major social media platforms. To listen to more such podcasts, log on to www.hdsmartcast.com.